This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We've all had hard times, times when things got so tough we just want to quit, give up everything, and start over. And usually we overcome that desire, we persevere, but some people don't. Robert Harrell was one of those people. In his case, he chucked it all and became a hermit. He was 62 years old in 1955 when he left the mountains of North Carolina and struck out for the coast. He settled in an abandoned bunker at Fort Fisher, where he eventually became the second largest tourist attraction on our state's coast. He was called the Hermit of Fort Fisher, and he is the subject of a new play at the Paramount Theater in Burlington. Dave Wright is with us in the studio. He wrote the play, The Hermit of Fort Fisher. Dave, welcome to you. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. It's an honor.
Also with us, Wayne Leonard. He plays Robert Harrell in the play. Wayne, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks very much. Good to be here.
Dave, tell us the story, The Hermit of Fort Fisher.
It is a remarkable one, and you started it off very well. Robert, at the age of 62, found himself to be a failure in everything he had attempted in life. He was a failure as a father, a failure as a husband, a failure as a businessman, an employee. Everything in his life just turned to mud. It wasn't for a lack of trying. He was a product of a terrible situation growing up as a young person. He could not hold a job. He was always somewhere else in his mind. A lot of that had to do with his upbringing and the voices he heard in his head that as a youth drove him into the woods. That was the only place he could get relief from the voices that he heard. He did a stint involuntarily committed at Broughton Hospital by his in-laws, and he kept escaping until they finally just let him go. And then after his marriage collapsed, he was estranged from his children for so many years. At the age of 62, he lit out for the coast and there managed to find a degree of peace and actual success. And the process by which he did that is fairly complicated, and our play tries to distill down.
Well, one of the interesting things in the process, while his life was coming apart, he was enrolled in a correspondence course, right? That gave him a kind of a philosophy.
This was really, I think, the thing that got him through. It was the Taylor School of Biophysiopsychology, run by a Unitarian minister out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. And if you sit down and read it, and I've read both the books that the gentleman published, it's essentially fluff. It's warmed over Emerson. It is, you are a child of the universe. You were born for success, this kind of stuff. It was a correspondence school. Each month you would get a test and a lesson. You'd read the lesson, take the test, and send $5 in. And this continued on. And at some indeterminate point in the future, you would receive your degree in biophysiopsychology. Robert bought into it completely at a time when he was not able to put food on his family's table at a regular basis. He was sending $5 to Dr. Taylor. It ended up breaking up his marriage and costing him a lot personally. But when he got to the coast, he believed in it so much and tried to impart it to others that it gave him a sense of mission and purpose. And it's my feeling that that's how he got through.
When you say tried to, is it because he was proselytizing or because people found him and came to him or some combination?
Yeah, they first found him and came to him. It was such a novelty back then that this man would voluntarily choose to go live in this bunker with no electricity, no running water. He lived off the bounty of the ocean and the kindness of strangers. People would come down just to look at him, to talk to him. He was an object of suspicion. The city people tried to get rid of him. The county tried to get rid of him.
Well, and literally, forgive me for interrupting, but I need a picture here of his living conditions. Literally, what was that like?
It was what you would really call a junkyard. I mean, it was pretty squalid conditions. He felt he was living in paradise. He would, if nothing else, he would eat raccoons that he trapped. It was just, that's been one of the fun things about producing the show is recreating this amazing junkyard that he lived in. But he felt he was in paradise and exactly where he was supposed to be in his life.
I'm just going to stay away from the dip in the green room then, if that's the case. But so he's living this life. He's supporting himself. He's more or less trying to stay off to himself. How did he get discovered? How did that whole process start?
Well, he was what you would call a social hermit. He wasn't the hermit in the classic sense. He did interact with people. He would go to town mail a letter. He wrote constantly, all the time. He had a typewriter. He would go mail letters. He would have people come and visit, and he kept a frying pan with 91 cents in it. People would see that as almost like a tip jar, and they would leave him money. So he began to see that if he got people down there and welcomed them and actually entertained them, he would almost be clownish at times to get them down there. Then he could talk to them about biophysiopsychology. And so it was kind of like a two-way street for him.
So, Wayne Leonard, you are playing the role now of the hermit of Fort Fisher. How much did you know about him before you took on this role?
I had not heard of the hermit before this role. My vacations as a child went with South Carolina beaches, so I was unaware of the hermit story. And so until Dave approached me with the script and said he wanted to do this play, that was the first I'd heard of him. So, but it is an amazing story.
How did you prepare for the role?
When Dave first approached me, it was coming a couple of years ago now. We had planned to do this. There was a video that was produced, so I watched that. And then things happened, and we had to delay a couple of years. And so I kind of put that aside and went back and watched the video again once we'd had a cast. It was different watching the video, and I could assign people from the cast and match them up with people in the video then. It made them much more real. Mm-hmm. So watching that video, watching how he interacted with the people, listening to his voice, just trying to capture the essence of who he was.
So would you play, give us a scene now, a little sample of the Hermit of Fort Fisher?
Oh, sure. You want to set this up?
Yeah. Part of the way we do the show is in flashback. A linear telling of the story then becomes almost like the documentary that Wayne mentioned, which, by the way, is a wonderful one, and I recommend it to everybody. But we decided to do it in flashback and with voiceovers. As I mentioned, he wrote constantly. Some of his letters, I saw one that was 14 pages front and back, single space typed. And so we went back and I went back and excerpted some of these, and at various points during the show, they come up. This is the final one, and it kind of summarizes his approach to life. It's not very lengthy, but it's very instructive.
Our journey through life is like a journey across the ocean. If the winds are forever calm and the water is like glass, the trip can be a downright bore. On the other hand, if the winds rage and the waters are angry, the trip is perilous and fraught with danger. The best journey of all is where the elements test you with just enough adversity to keep you on guard and strong, ready for anything that might come your way. If we live our lives in a self-reliant, prepared way, the journey can be full of wonder and amazement.
That's Wayne Leonard playing Robert Harrell in The Hermit of Fort Fisher. It's showing at the Paramount Theater in Burlington June 21st, starts tonight through the 23rd, 8 o'clock, and then June 24th at 3 p.m. You know, as I listen to that, Wayne, it's kind of interesting to me how you embody a character when you have both the written form. You know, here's a guy, here's what a guy wants you to think about him, right? Here's the sculpted, premeditated thought, and then kind of how he acts. Was he two different people? Was he trying to become the writing that he projected? Or how did you handle those, in a sense, two minds, the mind of the writer, the mind of the hermit?
You know, the hermit, I mean, that was a title kind of thrust upon him. He didn't choose that title of being a hermit. People came in down and saw him living that kind of isolated life. And I think we talked about the school he wanted to start down there. So he had this intellectual thought of what life should be. So trying to and he had friends that came down, friends who befriended him, not just would visit it on, you know, once a year during the summer, but he had regular friends down there too. So in the play, we developed those friendships. Impey, one of his friends down there, and Pickler in our play, Pickler. And then the voiceovers of what his thoughts. So the voiceovers of those intellectual thoughts are in voiceover. So that kind of separates those two as well.
Well, David, when the story continues and it ends unhappily, we should talk about how this thing ends.
It does, and it's a continuing source of controversy and deep sorrow for the people who knew Robert and know of his story. He was constantly harassed by an element down there, and a surprising element. There were the common, what he called hoodlums, criminals. There were the some people in law enforcement in New Hanover County at that time. And if you know anything about it, they were having some internal problems there. And then there were land developers who wanted his land. He was able, pretty much on his own and with the help of one gentleman, to beat off all these challenges, to beat them back, and was able to stay down there for 17 years.
Was it private land or was it the Fort... State land?
The interesting thing, they claimed it was state land. The Army actually claimed it, but a fellow named Stanley South, an archaeologist who helped save Fort Fisher monument and those relics down there, was able to prove that the land that he lived on did not exist when those boundaries were drawn. Silt built up his land over that period of time, and by the laws of adverse possession, essentially squatter's rights, it was his land at that time. But there are three schools of thought about what happened to him. He was found 40 years ago this month, June the 3rd, 1972, was found in his bunker, bloodied, bruised, covered in sand, shirt pulled up around his armpits, drag marks all the way down to the water and back. His sleeping bag was full of sand. The coroner came in, took one look at him, and ruled it a heart attack.
Heart attack?
A heart attack. There are three schools of thought. One, he was robbed for the money he was supposed to have. And he did have money, and he kept in pickle jars, but it was not a huge amount of money. It was rumored he was rich. The second is that he was the victim of a prank gone terribly wrong. And then the third and the most sinister of all is that he was murdered to get him off his land. There is the Hermit Society today. I am a card-carrying member now of the Hermit Society, a group of several hundred people who are trying to keep his principles alive and also keeping pressure to have this case reopened at some point to prove that he was the victim of foul play.
Interestingly enough, the case was reopened at one point, and
yes,
that, too, is a story.
But that is part of our story. The findings were declared inconclusive. The Hermit's son, Edward, was very adamant about the fact that his father was murdered. He made some comments, and as they used to say in class with the book reports, if you want to know how the story ends, you got to read the book. You got to come buy a ticket and see, because I don't want to spoil it. But it is a fairly dramatic ending to this show, and there are people, like I say, who are still absolutely convinced that there are people who are getting away scot-free with a terrible crime.
Tell us a little bit about the Paramount Theater in Burlington. That is now back to life, and theater is alive and well in Burlington.
It certainly is. We're very proud. The Paramount came online originally in 1928 as a movie house, fell on hard times, and eventually had to close in 1994. We got reopened in 98, and we're averaging now 250, 260 uses of the Paramount a year. And the nice thing about theater in Burlington is we can attract people like Wayne who have this talent. He lives in Durham. We get people from Greensboro, from Roxboro, from Ashboro to come and do Paramount Acting Company shows because you can get here from there. I like to think the quality of the shows we do. We have three community theaters in Burlington, two children's theaters. All of our private schools have active theater programs which perform at the Paramount. We're well on the way, I think, to keeping theater alive and well.
And it gives us a venue for new creations and original dramas that are about the state of North Carolina. When did you first think that this would be grist for a play, and how did you get involved in writing the story?
The source of all my best ideas, my wife, gave me a little self-published book by the president of the Hermit Society. She said she had heard of him when she vacationed in Carolina Beach as a young person. I read the book, then went to the East Carolina University Special Collections section of the Joyner Library, where they have, and this sounds funny, the Hermit's papers are collected and all the memorabilia and stuff like that. and read that and said, there's such a conflict, there's such an arc in his story of going from abject failure to a degree of success and contentment and peace in his life. It was tailor-made for the stage.
Does he have any disciples? Are there any people who feel that they've learned at his feet and have carried on the tradition in any way?
Very, very much so. The members of the Hermit Society, many of them are people who actually knew him. And Wayne and I went down on the 3rd to the aquarium. They held the observance of his passing. And people would stand up and ask questions of the panel. The fellow who made the documentary was there. They're still this heartfelt love and respect and admiration for Robert and how he touched people's lives 40 years, more than 40 years ago. It really is a remarkable testament to the fact that success can come at any time in your life.
And manifest itself in many ways.
Yes.
David and Wayne, thank you both for being on the program. Great to talk with you.
Thank you, sir.
David Wright, the writer, a writer and director of the play, The Hermit of Fort Fisher. Wayne Leonard plays Robert Harrell in the play, The Hermit of Fort Fisher, at the Paramount Theater in Burlington, June 21st through the 23rd at 8 o'clock, and then June 24th at 3 p.m. That's our program for today. Thanks for listening. You can find us at thestateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Alex Granados and Sean Wen. Stella Strohmeyer is our intern. Robin Copley is the technical director. Al Bodarsky sitting in today. Managing editor Lindsay Foster Thomas and Susan Davis is our senior producer. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.